Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Tuesday, to get you through another crazy, wild, maddening day of news. And we're going to figure out together live on the Jason Rant Show on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM. For our friends on the Greater East Side, we got a lot to get to. We only have, let's see, 1 to 2 hours left to do it. Bruce Harrell, mayor of Seattle, is spending money to fix a problem that will continue once they're done spending all the money. Herschel Walker is hit with a bombshell that he paid for a woman's abortion. Where's the evidence? Does it matter? We'll actually dive into it. Plus, the city of Olympia is embracing a racist meeting and strategy for community input, all at your expense. Sounds illegal. Probably is. We're going to get into that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rant Show brought to you by 3010weightlossforlife.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
King County wants to expand that 270-bed shelter to add 150 more beds. That's the expansion in the International District. We've talked about it on the show pretty frequently. It would accommodate more sobering beds, which means addicts will be coming in and sleeping there. They'll have RV parking, which means even more of the broken down RVs will be in the International District taking up space, not being safe. They have pallets for people, I guess, to continue to live outside if they choose, but just in their little zone. And no one who actually lives in the International District wants it there. I mean, good luck finding someone who wants it there. Good luck finding someone who's all like, yeah, go ahead and expand. In fact, you're not expanding fast enough. We want it here today, and we want it to be bigger. No one actually wants it, and the county and the city, and they admit this, they have already packed this general area of Seattle with all of these service providers, shelters, whatever it is you want to call it. There are a ton in the International District, SoTo, Pioneer Square. And so they're all like, why are we getting all of this? Why can't it be spread out? Now, folks on the ground, some of the activists, and now, of course, the world's worst columnist, Naomi Ishizaka from the Seattle Times, who claims everything is an issue of white supremacy and racism. Some of them are out there saying that the reason why they're putting it in the International District is because we're Asian and they don't care about us. Now, I certainly agree. They don't care about Asians. This is not an example of white supremacy. This is not an example of racism. All this is an example of is the indifference that county leaders, city leaders have towards people, the people who pay their salaries. This has nothing to do with race. They just don't care what you think, and they think they know better than you do. They know better, so shut up, sit down, let us do our things, but you're, of course, going to keep paying us your taxes so we can fund these things, right? Now, of course, as we've been talking about on the show, the people in the area have said, we're not going to shut up. We're not going to sit down. We're not going to take this. This is an example of what it means to be activated in your community. Activists, neighbors, people who have never done anything like this before said, you know what? No, we're not going to be quiet. We're going to continue to push back. And that's exactly what they did. And obviously, the media is starting to pick up on it in a bigger way, and they're starting to question folks who have made this decision, like Leo Floor, who's the director of the Department of Community and Human Services. Really, he's just focused on the services part, not really talking to the community or acting like you're talking to human beings who actually care about their own neighborhood. And he did a press conference yesterday. It was part of a media press thing yesterday, in which he justifies the location, justifies the plan, and really justifies not listening to the demands of the community.
They've said that, and I agree with this, that people experiencing homelessness are not dangerous. What they've said is they're worried about the people who prey upon them. I can't think of a better way to make people experiencing homelessness safer than bringing them inside instead of leaving them outside to be preyed upon.
That is, I will say this, that was beautiful gaslighting. I'm kind of impressed because I don't know this Leo Floor character. He's not a politician, but boy, did he just act like one. That was next level transparent gaslighting that probably worked on a few people, because it's supposed to get you to say to yourself, okay, I mean, we did ask for people to come inside, and we do know that that's best for them. I mean, we've certainly said that on this show multiple times. That's not what the argument is. That's not what a single person in the International District is complaining about. They're talking about the location. They're not talking about the strategy of bringing people inside. They're not talking about expanding even shelter space. They're saying this particular one in this particular neighborhood that is already overwhelmed with these shelters and services, bringing more homeless people here who, by the way, are not going inside. We are saying this is the wrong spot, period. That's all they're saying. That is all they're saying. But Leo Floor likes to twist it around. And really, this is about people getting in the way of bringing homeless people inside. He knows what he just did was a rhetorical sleight of hand. Very good. I'm smarter than you, though, so I caught it. Sorry, Leo. I'm way smarter than you are. It would appear that the activists in the community, and again, just everyday neighbors, who have decided to step up in a way, making them an activist. They've got on their side Adrian Diaz, the new Seattle police chief. He spoke with King 5 News.
We should just take a step back and really evaluate how much level of services is in this area, because another one could really create an impact, almost just permanently damaging that neighborhood.
100% agree with him. I mean, just don't put it in my neighborhood. I already got enough homeless people to... There's no place for them to put it in my neighborhood, so I'm fine. And you know what? If they came out and said, look, we just don't have space, tell us where you would like us to put it. Seattle is densely populated. The International District already has this space that's unused, and there's already a nearby shelter. It makes it – at least make that argument. They're not even trying. They don't seem all that interested, and they're hoping that the media will give them a pass. And for the most part, the media has. Yeah, they're covering it. But they are not relentless in getting answers, because they need access – to people like Dow Constantine. One thing that I am proud of on this show is I do not require access to any politician in order to talk about the stories and in order to do my job. I don't need any access whatsoever. I'll certainly take it, right? I'll do interviews with politicians and I'll ask questions and I'll happily get their answers and report on it. But I don't require access to, for example, Dow Constantine. I don't. But there are every single other media outlet out there that does. King 5 needs access. Cairo 7 needs access. Q13 needs access. Como needs access. Seattle Times needs access. The list goes on and on. And so they can't be too pushy to try to get answers, which is why the folks over in Dow Constantine's office loathe, not just me, but Jonathan Cho, former reporter at Como, now is part of the media arm of the Discovery Institute. And Dow Constantine's office has been getting into it off and on with Cho for about a month, month and a half on this particular issue. And in fairness to them, Cho is very aggressive. He's kind of a pain in the ass. I've told him that many times. God love him. He's a friend of mine. He is very aggressive. I can appreciate the aggression. I really can. Because there are so many others out there who don't get aggressive at all, and they allow people like Dow Constantine to take advantage of the situation and withhold information that's important for the public to know. And so Jonathan Cho tried to go to this event yesterday, and he was denied. Why was he denied? Because apparently he is not a journalist.
It's open to members of the media.
I've contacted you multiple times, Marta. You haven't returned any of my calls.
You don't need to make a scene about this.
So are you going to... You haven't even sent me an email.
You're not a member of the media, Jonathan.
Uh-oh. I'm not a member of the media, so I'm not being allowed to go into this tour?
Into the media tour? No.
Now, that guy who's speaking right now is Chase Gallagher, who is the spokesperson for the King County Executive. I will note, I have a relatively good relationship with him. I know he hates me, but I have a good working relationship. I don't need anyone to like me. I would prefer if you like me, but I don't need you to. I don't. You know, I like a hug every once in a while, but he responds when I ask him questions. He is open to conversation, so I will give him that. This was a boneheaded move on his part.
No, you're not.
Okay. When? What is it going to take for me to be able to go into this media tour?
You would have to work for a media organization, which you do not. You work for an advocacy group.
I work for Discovery Institute,
which is an advocacy group.
Well, we have a media wing called FixHomelessness.org.
It's not a media wing.
Okay.
These are broadcast journalists, independent journalists. They work for media groups, not Jonathan. You're
okay. So, and I'll let him finish again. What media organization do independent journalists work for? I'm legitimate. I don't know the answer to that question. What if you are an independent journalist, which Jonathan Cho in part considers himself? He's obviously working also with Discovery Institute, but he does independent journalism. Brandi Cruz, friend of mine, friend of the show, does independent journalism. What media organization do independent journalists work for? The answer is none. They are independent. They work for themselves. You can call them anything from independent journalists to glorified bloggers. There is a long list on the spectrum of what you can label certain people and what they do. But really what this was about was Jonathan Cho represents the Discovery Institute, and that is a think tank on the right. Jonathan Cho is not friendly to the Dow Constantine cause. And you combine those two things together and a little bit of the getting pretty aggressive when he does questioning. And all of a sudden, bam, you get banned from events or not invited to certain events under the claim that, oh, we're only allowing for media organizations. What is a media organization? What is a journalist? Should the government get to decide that? There are free speech implications here. He says you work for an advocacy organization. Well, Real Change News is a newspaper. They print a newspaper. It's an advocacy organization. They're a nonprofit organization. And Real Change is the media arm of the advocacy group. Do you think that they get banned if they were to show up? They do interviews with politicians all the time. They show up to press conferences. They cover press conferences. Would they get banned from King County Dow Constantine's pressers? Does Amari Salisbury of Converge Media get banned? That's an advocacy group. They don't work for a media organization. They just put out reports. They cover news in their own way. Does blogger Erica Barnett, who is obsessed with me, does she get allowed access? Yes, all the time. She's just a blogger. Not a media organization. She bought a website blog. That's it. She's a blogger. And that doesn't mean I'm diminishing the work she does, even though I think she's awful. But it's the point. I don't think she should get banned. I don't think Real Change should get banned. I don't think that Converge Media should get banned. And I also don't think Jonathan Cho should get banned. The reason why he's being pushed out is because of his positions. If you want to argue that he's getting too aggressive, okay, make that argument. Go ahead and make that argument. That's not what they're saying. They're saying you're not a journalist. Who gives you the right to determine who a journalist is? And you might think it's cut and dry. It is not. It is not. If you are covering the news, I would argue you are a journalist. If you have a platform to put out said material that you're covering, I would argue you're a journalist. Now, will you be always seen as a respected journalist? No. I don't think so. We had this whole thing of citizen journalists. Remember when CNN used to do that? Just go out there with your phone, start reporting on things. Well, CNN labeled them journalists, civilian journalists. Are they journalists? Yeah. Now, should you let absolutely everyone in to a media press conference? No. I don't think so. I think you can have rules. Set them up. Make sure that they're clear. But let's not pretend that this is just a cut and dry black and white issue. It truly is not.
Not allowed in there.
I'm going to go as I don't understand why I'm not being allowed to go in.
Not a member of the media, Jonathan.
So I'm not being allowed to go in?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. So King County and Dow Constantine officially doesn't consider me the media.
Don't be defensive about this. Don't make a scene about it.
Well, he's definitely going to. Do you know Jonathan? Of course he's going to get defensive. I would get defensive too. Now, there was one point during this video where he was trying to film through the fence. There was someone on the other side who had an umbrella that covered it. I asked Chase Gallagher who that person is. He says, I don't know. Couldn't tell from the video. I said, well, I'm asking who it is, and I want to know who it is. Because if you now have a county employee who works for you, covering footage that's taken from a member of the public with an umbrella, that goes 10 steps too far. Are you Antifa or are you a county member of staff? Just kind of curious. So we're going to continue to follow up on this. I want some answers, including, and I put in that boring thing, the public disclosure request. I put that in today to find out the list of all the media outlets that get invited to these events. I'm curious if there will be any what he would consider to be non-media organization recipients. I'm curious. I'm wondering if Real Change News gets the media press releases. Push the button.
What's trending? The mayor's office.
So the city of Seattle is offering about $2 million in total of federal funds to fix broken windows, to fix the businesses that have been vandalized, in particular small businesses.
This fund is not going to solve all of our public safety issues, nor is it going to solve all of our small business needs.
No, it won't.
It's also just a great way of the city kind of showing up in a way that business owners have asked us to show up in years past.
Okay, that's the director of economic development puffing himself up. I would say we're doing a very good job here.
Applications will be open October 18th. So we've got a couple weeks to make sure that we're letting people know about this program. And OED is going to process the applications on a continual basis until all funds are spent. So it's going to be rolling application processing.
Now, I think everyone out there can acknowledge the significant issue facing businesses, not just from COVID, but from the crime crisis, from the homelessness crisis. You've got businesses all across the city of Seattle, and let's be clear, all across the state of Washington, that have been dealing with homeless people vandalizing things, petty criminals breaking into businesses, just degenerates who decide to tag things with graffiti. It's a problem for a lot of business owners. Among them is Christine. She's owned the Half and Half Donut Company for about 3 years. Now she spoke with our sister station, Cairo News Radio, and Sam Campbell, and she said its signage has just been completely destroyed by graffiti.
This graffiti right now that we've been experiencing is a recent change to our little neighborhood here.
Yeah, I bet. Unfortunately, other neighborhoods have a ton of it all over the place. And as a result of what happened, she's had to spend a ton of money out of pocket to install shatterproof and graffiti-resistant windows. And I guess it kind of helps, at least to the point of the window not getting destroyed. However, vandals end up just tagging around the graffiti-proof window. That's it. And she, of course, has to pay for it.
So right now it's just on profit from the company.
That's not an easy world to live in as a business owner. She, of course, isn't the only one. Miyasa owns Cineholic on Capitol Hill. She is overwhelmed by this problem.
If I wanted to repair that, it'll probably cost me $300 to $500 a month.
So she looks at the graffiti on her building, on her business, and says, it makes more sense for me just to keep it there.
Knowing that I'm just going to have to pay for it every single month and every time it happens, I would honestly just rather leave it.
So I anticipate she will be someone like Christine, like so many others, who will try to get a little bit of the cash from the $2 million fund. They are owed something from a city that has made this crime crisis as bad as it is. This is not through any fault of their own. So I hope she gets some of the money. But she said something to Sam that I thought was important to highlight.
Safety is a much bigger concern than it's ever been in Seattle and especially here on Cap Hill.
She's 100% correct. The city of Seattle in this fund are paying for a Band-Aid on a wound that requires sutures. This is a Band-Aid on an open wound that is just hemorrhaging blood. It needs something more than a Band-Aid that will last for 10 minutes before it gets soaked in blood and just falls right off before the patient ends up dying. And in this case, the patient is the business. You are paying to paint over graffiti that will be replaced with other graffiti a few hours later, maybe a day later, maybe if you're lucky, a week later, maybe. You're paying to fix some broken window or broken sign that will get destroyed yet again a week later. Now, it's not to say that this plan, this fund, isn't well-intentioned. I think it is. I'm glad that they're doing it. And again, I hope people who have suffered and are struggling financially get a piece of it. It's going to be out there. You paid for it via taxes. You might as well collect it. I'm not critical of Mayor Harrell or anyone who proposed this idea, whether it's there or Tacoma had a similar fund. It wasn't quite as much. They had a similar fund to fix broken windows. Cool. That's great. But you're not addressing the problem. You're not preventing it from happening again. It is a gesture that truly won't mean anything the second the same exact problem comes back that caused the vandalism to begin with. Unless you go after the root causes, the homelessness, the drug addiction, unless you go after that and allow police to do their jobs and then prosecutors to actually prosecute, unless that happens, it's nothing but a kind of nice gesture that I'm sure people will appreciate. But imagine what it'll feel like the second that Christine or Mayasa get some of the funds, they fix what they need to, and then it happens yet again. Just imagine what they feel like at that point. Because I imagine once you're able to get it fixed, you're like, I'm so glad finally we got some, you know, kudos, they gave us this, we're onward. And then you show up the next day your business and you realize it was just vandalized again. Well-intentioned, but well-intentions aren't going to fix the problem. Good intentions do not fix this problem. The only way to fix it is politically. That's the truth. Whether we're talking about Seattle or Tacoma, Eatonville or Redmond, whatever problem you have in your community at this point can only be fixed politically, meaning you better vote. You better actually vote. We're going to be talking about this issue and so much more at the Freedom Series coming up next Wednesday in Renton at the Carco Theater. Tickets are only $12. We have under 30 tickets left. Two more tickets sold in the last commercial break. I keep hitting refresh and I want to see how many are left. So there are two fewer tickets left. We will sell out by this weekend, so please purchase your tickets today. We're trying to make sure that we have more fans on this show in the audience cheering and screaming and, you know, no, you don't have to flash. I said no throwing panties on the stage because I'm not impressed by that. But we got to have more than Brian because I have my boss, the big boss lady, in the audience. And I'm the first person up. So when my name comes up, when you see me on screen, I need, oh my God, everyone saying, he's the best, give him more money. That's what I'd like to hear from everybody. Tickets, KTTH.com. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. You just heard What's Trending, brought to you by Guardian Roofing and Gutters.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. Online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our time, our conversation, our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in the city of Olympia. It's hosting a racist community safety meeting. Now, you don't have to be racist to attend. It's the very meeting structure that is racist. Because the officials in the city of Olympia are advancing BLM-inspired initiatives. They've been on this since George Floyd. This is a community outreach meeting that I think is happening as a result of just too many pro-police and pro-law enforcement participants. So city leaders in Olympia decided to create this 9-member community work group, and its intent is to, quote, reimagine public safety. And they say they'll do this via inclusive community gatherings, a process that includes not just sending out surveys and getting some results, but having in-person and digital meetups. Now, the bulk of their work seems to have been completed by now. It was summarized in June. I had a content. I got a hold of one of their summary documents, and it was actually pretty consistent. The theme of response is pretty consistent. You had a bunch of people who are complaining about a lack of attention to property crimes, needing the people who violate laws actually held accountable. It said the Olympia Police Department has to be able to do its job. They complained you're giving way too much leniency to criminals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's funny because I pulled just one summary line from this document. While not expressed by all participants, but was expressed in each group, the word accountability was invoked in connection to two sentiments. A, criminal laws have been diluted. And B, there is a need for more personal responsibility to be required of those committing criminal behavior. Seems pretty consistent to me. But apparently the city wasn't done soliciting opinions. And boy, are they looking for very specific opinions. If you want to attend this next meeting that is on, October 27th, you have to be a member of the black community. It's only for black people. It's a black-only meeting, which, again, kind of seems, call me old school, seems racist to me. It says, in continuation of its ongoing outreach efforts, the Reimagining Public Safety Workgroup will host an additional listening session for black community members. Now, how does the city legally justify that? Because that would appear to be, I don't know, illegal discrimination. Because the intent is very clearly to tell white people or Latinos, or excuse me, Latinx, or Asians, you're not welcome here. And so I reached out to the city manager who did not respond. He passed it along to the city comms team. The spokesperson named Kelly Purse Brasseth. This is what she responded. And I simply asked, what's the legal justification? Seems like a pretty simple question. Specifically, you asked if the session was legal and seemed to indicate some concern that it violated the Open Public Meetings Act. I didn't. This is a canned response. I didn't say anything about open meetings. Didn't even cross my mind. Please have no concern. The listening session is legal and is not a violation.
Oh, well, that's good.
Oh, well, okay.
Don't have
well,
any concern. That's no, great. No,
no. Never mind. Thank you so much. I mean, eventually, I probably would have asked a follow-up question if she didn't just definitively tell me that it was not illegal. Okay, thanks. Her response back, her legal justification is, it's legal because we say so.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
That's not, great. That's
not,
great.
Not quite how it works when asking for a legal justification. Simply saying it's legal doesn't mean it's actually legal. If I were to punch you in the nose and say, oh, don't worry, that's not assault, because I say it's not assault. No, it's still assault. I should go to jail for that. Well, I shouldn't. I should get privileged as a talk show host. But other people should absolutely go to jail for that. Now, usually, the disingenuous lawmakers or comms team members, they will justify racist meetings like this by saying, oh, don't worry, we're not going to turn anyone away at the door. If someone who's white wants to show up, obviously we're going to let them in. Yeah, uh-huh. They'll say, technically, it's open to everyone. The clear intention is to say that only black people should show up. That is the clear intention. And the reason why they're doing this is because city leaders think that it's non-black citizens. They are so racist that it needs to establish a quote-unquote safe space. That's the language they actually use. They want a safe space where they believe hypersensitive black people, they think black people are all hypersensitive, so much so that they will only feel safe if not in the presence of white people. If you don't give them a safe space, they're going to be victims of white supremacy and possibly a hate crime. The spokesperson wrote, a safe space is not just one where participants are sure they will come to no physical harm, but also one where when participants are confident no one in the room will cause them emotional harm. Oh, emotional harm. Often, that sense of safety comes with sharing the room with those who share their experiences. Because, you see, all black people are exactly the same. Did you know that? Just write that down in the book of knowledge.
Look, I'll write it down.
Thank you. We've created such safe spaces in this process for marginalized members of the community, but also for our police, fire, and other public safety personnel. You mean you had a staff meeting with your cops? That's not a safe space. It's not a safe space. Here's a question I have. Would the city of Olympia, or any city, would they ever set up safe spaces for white people? The answer, of course, is no. But I would argue, using their logic, they're constantly being labeled white supremacists. That seems to be something that could cause emotional harm. And we want to make sure that no one in the room is going to call them white supremacists. Why not have a white safe space? You would call that racist. They would never do that. They shouldn't ever do that. It is 100% racist. As is the idea of a black-only meeting. We'd call the idea of a safe space for white people to speak without fearing black people's reaction, we would rightly call that racist. And anyone who even floated that idea as a possibility would be shunned. Rightly so. And yet it's considered progressive, or I guess even inclusive, to have the exact same scenario but with the races reversed. Segregating people by race, and I cannot believe I have to still say this in 2022, but apparently we do for Democrats. Segregating people by racial identity, by religious identity, gender, whatever it is wrong. Push aside the legality argument for a moment. It's wrong. We used to learn, I guess at least before the far left activists took over education, we used to all learn that segregation was wrong. And we would go through the exact reasons why it was wrong. And here are some of the abuses that took place. Now, the very people touting their embrace of inclusivity, they're the ones telling people who have the quote unquote wrong color that they're not welcome to a taxpayer funded meeting. Does that not seem wrong to anybody else? And by the way, how condescending is this? Seriously, if you're someone who's in the black community in Olympia, wouldn't this seem condescending? Because if they said, we're only going to have room for Jews in our safe space, I would say, why? And they would say, well, we want to give you a safe space because we want to make sure that you're not offended when someone who's not Jewish holds an opinion that maybe is different than yours. That doesn't offend me as a Jew. I'm cool. It's all good. I can go in a room and hear people from... I could even hear a Muslim or an atheist or a Christian say something. Like, they don't think that black people can handle this. That seems condescending to me. It's also intentionally divisive. It's intentionally divisive. It's also likely social engineering. What I'm guessing is the city of Olympia might be selecting black-only meetings here to get a position or positions that they presume that the black community will hold. We were told by the BLM movement that they stand for black people, that they are representative of the black community. Everything they say is a reflection of what the black community wants. Now, of course, that's false. We know that to be false. It's a scam of a movement. It's where grifters use racism to make a whole lot of money. But the reality is, regardless of one's race or gender or religion, most people share the same views about public safety. It's easy to forget that because activists on the left are very, very loud and organized. But most people agree on just some basic concepts about public safety. The meetings up until this point are a reflection of that. I have to assume black people showed up, and Asians, and whites, and indigenous. No amount of social engineering is going to change that. And so given that as a fact, that no matter what they do here is not going to truly change what the public wants and what the public is thinking and feeling, couldn't you just be a little less racist while you're holding these meetings? Or is that a little bit too much to ask? Now, I've got this piece up on my blog that I hope you'll call attention to. Let's get some eyeballs on this. We've seen an increase in this kind of thing. The Issaquah School District a few months ago did the same thing for the superintendent search or comment. Race-based meetings, that's just, it's wrong. And also, I guess I don't understand why someone, even if they've convinced themselves that a safe space is necessary, why they don't see it as segregation. Honestly, it's literally what white people did when they were segregating bathrooms and schools, water fountains. Well, we got to be protected from the black people. They're beneath us and they're scary. So how is the reverse not also racist? Because whites aren't considered a marginalized community? Oh, okay. Aren't you doing just that, marginalizing them with garbage like this? Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link to this blog for you to read and post absolutely everywhere. Let's call this stuff out. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. John Kirby, spokesperson over in the Pentagon, he was on with Fox News today. And Brian Kilmeade decided, you know what, I'm going to start grilling you on an issue that is of paramount importance that too few people are talking about. We have a recruitment problem in this country. We've talked about it on this show from a law enforcement perspective. Haven't spent too much time talking about it from a military perspective. There are a lot of people who are choosing to forego a career in the military for a whole bunch of reasons. I think one big reason is how far to the left the military has gotten. All the wokeness, teaching more about proper pronoun use than about winning wars. And the folks that might find that appealing would never join the military to begin with. Someone's all like, I would love a seminar on white fragility. Yeah, they're anti-military. They're not joining. And do we really want a whole bunch of vegans joining? Let's be honest. They're weak. They can barely pick up the rifle. And then they'll say, ew, guns bad. Now, the people who are turned off by that kind of stuff, the exact kind of person who would otherwise join the military. No one in the Biden administration wants to acknowledge that. And oddly enough, they've decided to make it worse because they are getting rid of people in the military who decide not to get vaccinated with the COVID shot. And so John Kirby knows this. Brian Kilmeade knows he knows this. And he pressed him.
Vaccinations are a valid military requirement. You want your troops to be ready. And part of being ready is being healthy and not being able or not having the ability to infect your unit.
So just real quickly, and I'll let him finish. The vaccine doesn't stop the spread of COVID. We all know that as a matter of fact. That is not controversial to say. It wouldn't even get you banned from Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, or Facebook to say that. That used to get you banned. Not anymore. Everyone knows the vaccine does not stop the spread of COVID. So if that's the first piece of defense you offer, you already know there is none. There's no defense for this ridiculous policy. So can we maybe stop using it? Oh, he's going to take it back in a moment. Yeah, let's continue to listen to this nonsense.
Make their unit readiness any worse than it is. Look, I'm talking to you from home here because I'm wrapping up my own bout with COVID here over the last 10
Admiral
days.
Exactly.
I'm not going to
Admiral, exactly.
I don't want to get.
But listen, just to blend in the military and the science, we all know that this vaccine does not address any of the variants we're currently experiencing.
Yep.
So therefore, there's minimal positive to getting it now, which is why you guys don't even talk about it. To invest in our...
And by the way, isn't that a really important point? When was the last time you heard anyone, any politician, pushing you to get the vaccine? Every once in a while, we've heard some of the stories saying, if you're over 60, you should definitely get the booster. Have you heard anyone talk about getting the vaccine lately? When was the last time Biden did it? Before he told us that the whole pandemic was a result of the unvaccinated. It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And oh my God, they're all going to die soon because they didn't get vaccinated, which of course is all nonsense. It was nonsense at the time. When was the last time we were told to get vaccinated by a public official? When did Inslee do that? Can you remember any time recently? Since you've been here in Washington, how long have you been here from Oklahoma?
What, 2 months almost?
Okay, so 2 months here. You lived in a state that told you, don't get the vaccine.
Essentially.
You came here. Do you remember ever being told to get vaccinated?
Not here.
Exactly. And this is like the place you go if you want to be told how amazing you are and how heroic you are for getting the vaccine. You come to Washington. You come to Seattle in particular. None of that. So that is kind of odd. Why are they not pushing it?
People and train them and then dismiss them for experimental vaccine is folly when you can't recruit. Every one of your branches can't recruit their threshold, yet you're kicking out good men and women.
Yep.
How do you explain that?
He can't.
Well, look, Brian, first of all, the Navy did make their recruiting goals for enlisted personnel this year. Yes, it's a tough recruiting environment. We recognize that. But it's also, you have a requirement to be healthy to be able to serve. And this is a valid military requirement.
It's a lawful order
to get the vaccine. And look, even if it doesn't prevent you from getting COVID, oh. I'm double boosted. I got it myself here just the last
week. That's your decision.
Or so. It makes the symptoms a lot less severe.
I don't know if that's true anymore. It's a different variant. The variant itself is less severe than the others. Just on an unvaccinated person, the current variant versus early on, the first one, it's remarkably different. It is less virulent. We know that, again, as a matter of fact. So you're telling me that something that might, on a scale of 1 to 10, cause you a 3 in the, ugh, I don't feel good department, goes down to a 2 because of the vaccine. I don't know if that's meaningful enough for most people. For me, it's not. But ultimately, is it a good enough reason to push this on the military as a condition of being enlisted? I would argue no.
Get you back on duty.
So it's worth kicking out the healthiest people in our country who are already sacrificing. It's worth kicking them out?
Brian, we would rather not lose anybody, of course, to the vaccine. We'd rather not lose anybody from a retention perspective.
But you're choosing to.
To have them leave the service. earlier than they wanted or we wanted them to. Right. But it's a valid military requirement.
No, it isn't. This is an experimental vaccine that just came off the shelf. Right. You know it's not valid, and it's risk our national security. Right. Admiral, you are a military officer. You could talk sense into this White House.
Yeah, but he's consumed the Kool-Aid. It's too far gone. He's not going to get in the way. And even now, knowing what we know about the vaccine, indisputable facts about the vaccine's efficacy, you're still not allowed to say what Brian Kilmeade just said on the left. If you say that on the left, you are deemed an anti-vaxxer. You're called a MAGA Republican. Yeah, we got it. So love that silly term. It doesn't mean anything. You just mean a Republican. So just say that. But if you were to say that on the left, you will be crucified. And the reluctance of people who should know better, and John Kirby knows better, or he should, to say nothing as we're losing good people in positions, not just in the military, but in law enforcement, at hospitals, it's unconscionable to me. We are risking, the implications of what we're risking can't be understated or can't be overstated. And no one wants to just be honest about this on the left, or not no one, but most people on the left in positions of power just refuse to be open and honest. And to what? To what end? Because someone will continue to think that you're a hero for pretending that you don't know the truth about the vaccine. Look, if you want to get the vaccine, get the vaccine. If you don't, don't. That's on you. It's up to you and your conversations with your doctor. But this idea that we're going to fire people still in 2022, in October of 2022... it just makes no sense. We'll talk about this and other issues at the KTTH Freedom Series next Wednesday in Renton. Tickets only $12 at KTTH.com.